Did you wake up this morning with stiff, creaky joints? If you did, it's no surprise because, like you, an estimated 1 in 3 adults have. Seekers, Mike Malloy here. No, I don't know what that was either. It was the beginning of a commercial. There's no telling what you're going to hear on this program. Welcome. It's 7 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you for joining us. This hour is sponsored by Carolyn Buck. Again, thank you, Carolyn Buck. Their message tonight: are we ready for the second revolution yet? Of, by, and for the people? Best to everyone, Carolyn Buck. Thanks, folks. Thanks for the sponsorship, for real. How about that North Korean liftoff? Well, the problem is, you know, when you pack all those people into the rocket and have them all pedaling like crazy to try to launch, it's just not going to work. All right, the big... The big non-essential story today, and yeah, I'm going to address it. By the way, coming up next hour, we have a guest. Her name is Hogan Gorman. That's her name. And she has a book out. An Incurable Smartass Takes on the Healthcare System and Lives to Tell the Tale. The title is Hot Cripple. I'll explain it later. On the front cover, there's a blurb by Salman Rushdie who says, quote, a smart, tough, and very funny book. Salman Rushdie, no less. And we're going to talk with Hogan a little bit later, top of the next hour. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Hope you will. And then tomorrow night, Dr. Roger Libby, who's a sociologist, he's also a sex therapist in practice in Seattle. We're going to talk to him. Should be interesting, right? Okay, to focus on this sidebar story that, of course, media pumped these things out of proportion. I come in at the end of 3 or 4 news cycles with this program, and I've been listening to bits and pieces of this all day, and I think, do you want to talk about this? Oh, come on. Well, I really don't, but I'm going to mention it anyway. Jessica Valente, writing at TheNation.com, kind of summarizes everything. She says, for most of today, the homepage of Fox News has featured a huge picture of the Romney family with the headline, 5 kids, 16 grandkids, and Democratic advisor charges Ann Romney has never worked a day in her life. The outrage, which has, you know, leaped across all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Internet, all the scummy little rat-infested right-wing websites, all these suckers. Anyway, it has to do with Hillary Rosen. She is a former Democratic strategist. Maybe she still is. I don't know. I think she would. Did she work? No, she didn't work for Obama. Did she? Or, I don't know. Maybe she did. I really don't care. I don't follow this stuff. But I gotta take note of this story. Her comments to Anderson Cooper on CNN yesterday. She said that Mitt Romney's wife, Ann, has never worked a day in her life. Now, you don't need more than a fourth grade education to understand the context and the clear meaning of what Hillary Rosen was saying. Ann Romney has never had to work a day in her life. Doesn't have to do with working around her houses. Although, as Daily Coast points out, Ann Romney has 5 housekeepers, so I don't know how much work around the house she could do. Well, all of a sudden, Hillary Hillary Rosen's comments become, rather than stand on their own, what they are. They're factually correct. She was making a point. Ann Romney's husband is a Republican. He's a Republican who has decided to join the asylum that is now the Republican Party, the right-wing nutcases. And in joining the asylum, in signing in and getting his basket and his number and going to his room, he has agreed that he will now join the war on women. So the point Hillary Rosen was trying to make, why doesn't Ann Romney tell her husband, since Ann Romney's never had to work a day in her life, there are women out here who do, who work their asses off, who are mothers, who work, who are, research scientists, college professors, waitresses, street sweepers, whatever, construction workers. They are working. They're working hard physical labor. Now, nobody's going to dispute that being a stay-at-home mom is not a job in and of itself. I don't know how much of a job it is when you have five housekeepers, but it's a job in and of itself. That wasn't the issue. That's immediately what the right-wing pigs turned it into. Anything to knock down Obama's massive lead with women. Now, Obama had nothing to do with it. You know, Obama had nothing to do with this. But then again, Obama hasn't had too much to do with most of the things the pig bastards accuse him of. Obama has his own black book of crimes, as far as I'm concerned, but none of them have to do with trying to put probes up inside of women's vaginas in order to freak them out if they want an abortion, if you understand what I'm saying. Rosen was responding to Mitt Romney's constant, trotting out of his wife, Ann. Whenever he gets a question on women's issues, this is an old trick that most politicians and certainly all right-wing crazed Republicans always use. Unless they want to keep their wives hidden. This is what Hillary Rosen really said. Quote, what you have is Mitt Romney running around the country saying, well, you know, my wife tells me that, well, women really care about our economic issues. And when I listen to my wife, that's what I'm hearing. Well, guess what? His wife has actually never worked a day in her life. She never really dealt with the kinds of economic issues that a majority of women in this country are facing in terms of how do we feed our kids? How do we send them to school? Why do we worry about their future? Now, all of that is factually, absolutely, underline absolutely, 80 damn times true, correct, and right on. And that's why the right wing went berserk. That's why every pig right winger went nuts today. Just absolutely nuts. I'm sorry, I keep calling her Ann. Hillary Rosen said nothing about stay-at-home moms. As Jessica Valenti says at TheNation.com, she didn't say anything about the idea that raising kids isn't work. Rosen was referring to the fact that Ann Romney, an incredibly rich, very white, and very elite woman, likely does not understand the economic concerns of most American women. Again, it may have been an unfortunate choice of words, but she was correct! There's nothing factually amiss or wrong with what Hillary Rosen said. But the Romney campaign, as you can expect, grabbed onto this controversy with their teeth, claws, everything they could get into it. And where did Ann Romney go to whine and plead her case? Right, Fox. Of course, she went to Fox. Now, I would maintain that to make the assumption or to make the comparison between what Ann Romney concerns a stay-at-home mom and what working moms have to deal with is the difference between North and South, up and down, left and right, hot and cold, heaven and hell. I mean, absolute extremes. I would venture that Ann Romney, I don't know Ann Romney from Adam's house cat, but I would venture being the multi-millionaire that she is, being in the 1%, way in the 0.1%, she has no idea, what it's like to work in the public sphere and be a mother. This entire BS subject, Ann Romney has never worked a day in her life, metaphorically or actually, and Hillary Rosen was making a salient point, a good point, because Mitt Romney does, you know, kick his wife up front and center whenever he wants to talk about women's issues. Romney has about as much charisma as a goddamn warthog, and can't, you know, Mormon men are not allowed to talk about that kind of stuff anyway. That's ladies' talk. That's, you know, it's about ladies' parts and ladies' talk and ladies' jobs and, you know, can't talk about that. You got to go out and ring doorbells and tell them the good news about the angel Moroni or something. But Hillary Rosen said the truth. And you know what happens in this country when you say the truth politically? Immediately the vermin, the cockroaches, swarm all over you from the right wing because they have no argument. There is a war on women, and it's being fought in a real nasty way. You want to know how nasty? A tweet from Catholic League President Bill Donahue, this Nazi, an absolute goddamn fascist. He's one of those Catholics who would have worked hand in glove with Pius, was it Pius the 12th and the German High Command to murder as many Jews as possible. That's the kind of Catholic Bill Donahue is. He attacked Hillary Rosen's family on Twitter this morning. Here's what he said. Lesbian Dem Hillary Rosen tells Ann Romney she never worked a day in her life. Unlike Rosen, who had to adopt kids, Ann raised five of her own. You see how this works? So this piece of human dreck, Bill Donahue, makes it very clear that Rosen's family is less valid, less worthy of respect because she adopted her children. Now, Think Progress, Zach Ford writing Think Progress, points out this insults not just lesbian couples, but all non-birth mothers. In fact, it seems like few even recognize that Rosen is a mother at all. I don't know. Here's a tweet from Alice Stewart, who until this week was Rick Santorum's national press secretary. This is from Alice Stewart. Being a mother is the most valuable work a woman can do. My heart goes out to Hillary's children. If she doesn't believe that, I don't know. And the Catholic League, that piece of human waste, Bill Donahue, then tweaked. Glad to know Hillary's fans are in a state of apoplexy. You'd think she was outed by their hysterical reaction. Get over it and grow up. You child-raping sons of bitches in the Catholic Church, I am so sick of all of you, especially your priests and your bishops and the scum, the Nazi Pope. I am so sick of all of you. And this Donahue freak, wow. So Hillary Rosen from this little corner of the universe, good on you, gal. You're absolutely correct. And Ann Romney can run and cry her $500 mascara tubes on Fox News and get all verklempt about a very straightforward statement. She has never worked a day in her life. She would not have a clue. When's the last time Ann Romney cleaned a toilet? When's the last time Ann Romney had to catch a bus at 4 o'clock in the morning and make two or three transfers so she could go clean somebody else's goddamn house? When's the last time Ann Romney went to work as some chump bastard secretary, taking all the, administrative assistant, taking all the flack, knowing that the job was only as secure as the creep she worked for? Ann Romney, you're a multimillionaire. Your net worth is almost half $500 million. Don't try to compare or find equivalence between you and working mothers. There is none, and you know it. And so does your funky husband. And so does every single disgusting right-wing cockroach in this country who just couldn't wait to come scurrying up out of the slime and jump on this one. And isn't it nice that the first thing that the fascist Bill Donahue Catholic Nazi goes for is Hillary Rosen's sexual orientation? You filthy pig. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these right-wingers? We'll be back in a minute.
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Yes, indeedy. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Carol and Buck. Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Buck. Their message, are we ready for the second revolution yet of by and for the people? Best to everyone. From Lee in New York City. Mike, ask Kathy what it's like to deal with being a radio producer, a parent, and not even getting away from your spouse when you get to work. What's it like?
Well, I haven't had a good manicure or pedicure in a long time, but I had fun at my brownie troop meeting today.
Yeah.
We learned all about carbon dioxide gas.
Yeah.
We earned our science badge.
Yeah.
We conducted an experiment with photosensitive beads where we went outside and watched them change color, the ones that didn't have sunblock on them.
Yeah.
We did a taste test with holding our noses and seeing if we could tell the difference between an apple and an onion.
Yeah.
To illustrate how,
I'm getting tired just listening
to
this.
Sorry. Yeah. I misplaced one of my housekeepers.
We also made homemade ice cream.
We made homemade ice cream because we wanted to show how rock salt lowered the freezing temperature of ice to make ice cream and learned that the secret ingredient to ice cream is air.
Air.
And that's what I did today. I also made cupcakes for our paint our neighborhood swimming pool party this weekend. And what else did I do? I balanced the checkbook, and I still can't find my servants. I know they're here somewhere.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you something. I wasn't able to pay them, and neither were you. And
that's got to be why they left.
Unlike Ann, did you see that thing? Ann, somebody at Daily Coast, somebody got hold of tax returns, or Romney's tax returns, to find out how much they paid their five maids. And it was something like $2.50 an hour.
$2.50 an hour.
No, $2.
$2.50 an hour.
50 cents an hour.
I would probably quit my day job if they wanted to pay me $250 an hour to be a maid.
Well, yeah.
So.
That's true. Yeah, that was the other thing. When we first moved back here from Atlanta, you worked as a maid.
I worked as a maid.
I did.
I was a housekeeper at a bed and breakfast
and
for a good friend of mine.
And you were paid $13 an hour.
$13 an hour.
And the Romneys pay their housekeepers, maids, $2.50 an hour?
That doesn't seem legal. But if they want to come work for me, I'll pay them $3 an hour. I'll take all five of them.
We don't have any money, you know that.
Well, I'll make them cupcakes.
There you go.
And I'll show them how to make a geyser out of Mentos candies and Diet Coke.
That was really fun. That Coca-Cola shot 15 feet into the air.
That was a lot of fun.
So cool. Those little girls were like, eek!
I was astonished. Who knew? We were simulating Old Faithful out there, showing, you know, pressurized gas and what do they call them? Nucleosites on the Mentos candies that had places for the CO2 to grab. And it was a lot of fun.
We had
a good brownie meeting today. I get more done by 4 p.m. than most people do in 2 weeks.
You do.
I do.
From D in Plano, Texas. Hillary Rosen was right in one sense. Not all moms have a choice to be stay-at-home mom. D writes, my mother finally got her chance to be a stay-at-home mom at age 65. As a single mother with five kids, she didn't have a choice of staying home and raising her kids. She had to work to put food on the table, clothes on our backs, and a roof over our heads. My mom worked two jobs, riding the bus every day to clean homes in one of the richest parts of town to put me and my brothers and sister through school, and then to put me through college. While we lived in a two-bedroom apartment in one of the poorest neighborhoods in Dallas, I don't ever recall anything that I wanted that she didn't work hard to give me. And regardless of our economic circumstances, the values were always there. We had to do our homework before watching television. We had to go to church on Sundays. We had to be in the house before the sun went down, and we had to eat our vegetables at dinner. My mom wasn't a working mom or a stay-at-home mom. She was just a mom. While Hillary Rosen's comments about Ann Romney not working a day in her life might have been ill-advised and ill-timed if you're a Democrat, the underlying premise of her remark is that at least Ann Romney had that choice. Most women simply don't have a choice of being a working mom or a stay-at-home mom. They're just busy trying to be a mom. Their circumstances do not allow them the luxury of deciding whether or not they're going to work. They simply have to work. I don't know Ann Romney, but she seems like a lovely woman. But with all due respect, for Ann Romney to attempt to act like she has the faintest idea of what women like my mom had to go through is ludicrous. And for Mitt Romney to throw this dog and pony show by dragging his wife out on the campaign trail with the promise that his wife can tell him what women today are going through is even worse. I don't begrudge Ann Romney for her wealth or for being a stay-at-home mom. What I do not like is someone worth over $200 million telling me that they know what I go through. And what's even more insane is that the policies that Mitt Romney is promising to enact, should he win the presidency, would make life even harder for women like my mother and even better for women like Ann Romney. My mom is now 78 years old with diabetes and showing early stages of Alzheimer's, but she's still going strong. And even though all of her children are grown and have left home, she is still a stay-at-home mom. My only wish is that she could have had that choice earlier in her life when it would have mattered and when she could have truly enjoyed it. Thanks, Mom. D in Plano, Texas. Yeah, you know, when I think of a multi-millionaire I know Ann Romney is probably, like Dee says, she's probably a nice person. She's dealing with, what is it, MS, I think. Everybody's life is singularly theirs. But for these right-wing Republicans, that, and apparently Mitt Romney's decided he's a right-wing neo-fascist just like the rest of them. For these right-wing Republicans to push a woman like Ann Romney out there to try to, the whole idea, well, Ann Romney's going to tell you women that there's no war on women. Ann Romney's going to try to make you feel good about the fact that right-wingers are invading even the most private parts of your bodies, for God's sake. Well, if Ann Romney's going to do that, then Ann Romney, regardless of her personal physical condition or her economic condition or whom she's married to, Ann Romney is going to have to take what comes back at her. She's not an expert on what working women go through. She has no idea. Hillary Rosen was absolutely correct. Ann Romney has never worked in the sense that Hillary Rosen meant it, a day in her life. So this is like expecting Mitt Romney to be an expert on anything. Mitt Romney couldn't find his ass with both hands. What does he know how to do? He knows how to pack up with 8 or 9 other men into a hunting party. And instead of using spears and bows and arrows, they use millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they go out and they find a wounded company, and they buy it, and then they dismember it. That's what Mitt Romney is good at. Mitt Romney has not a clue about economics either. You know that. I know that. He has not a clue about foreign policy. He's a spoiled little frat boy who happened to be brought up as a Mormon, who happened to spend his 2 years doing missionary work for the Mormon Church in France. Ooh, tough assignment, right, Mitt? I get sick of these people. I mean, I really do. It's just, it's just tiresome after all. You know what I mean? Just incredibly tiresome to hear people who are worth $250 million trying to present themselves as understanding to any degree what the average woman in this country goes through. Stay at home, working, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. But the really hideous, an insidious part of this whole manufactured nonsense was how quickly this goddamn fascist Donahue from the Catholic League goes after Hillary Rosen because of her sexual orientation. What a pig. What a filthy, slimy pig, Donahue. Again, I've said it before, and I mean this with all the ugliness I can muster. If some of these religious wackos just had a moment after they're dead, just some kind of a frame of reference where they would look around and go, okay, where are the angels? Hello? No way. What? Boom. No such luck. But Bill Donahue is another one of those good Christians. Yes, indeed. Good. Good for you, Bill. Yeah, just get right out there, you know. The fact that Jesus had some of Jesus' disciples were gay and probably half the women he knew were gay. Wouldn't that frost your ass? Even a big one like yours, Donahue, wouldn't it just frost your ass to find that out? Huh? Nasty old man.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Carol and Buck. Their message, are we ready for the second revolution yet of by and for the people? Best to everyone. Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Buck. Coming up after the break at the top of the hour here, we're going to chat with Hogan Gorman. That's her name, Hogan Gorman. And she has a book out that Salman Rushdie calls a smart, tough, and very funny book. And I actually read this one! You know, her agent got this to me when? Wednesday? Yeah. And it's paperback, and it's a quick read. Normally, or so often, when I'm going to interview or chat with, I don't do interviews, but chat with somebody who has published a book, usually the publishers will get me a copy like the day after the person is on the program. More right-wing assassinate the president talk. This comes from the another one of these ultra-wealthy super PAC donors, Foster Freese. You remember him? He was Rick Santorum's money fount. Now he's trying to slither into Mitt Romney's corner. And he, you know, he got the camera a little bit yesterday when he said, quote, there are a lot of things that haven't been hammered at because Rick and Mitt have been going at each other. This was on Fox. But now that they have trained their barrels on President Obama, I hope his teleprompters are bulletproof. And then he said, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. Now, this is the same piece of human waste that said a couple of months ago in February, this contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. That's the way he talks. He's a real illiterate little bastard. It's such inexpensive. Back in my days, they used Bayer aspirin for contraception. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly. Now, when he was the money font for Rick Santorum, he donated, what, a couple of million through the Santorum, Pro Santorum Red, White, and Blue Fund. That's a super PAC that spent about $8 million in support of this crazy Rick. But in the after Santorum decided, you know, it's time to go home and make more babies or whatever he decided to do, Foster Freese announced that he'd be turning his efforts toward Mitt Romney. Freese told Political earlier this week, quote, I'm obviously going to be of help in whatever way I can. Now, this is the same guy who said some really nasty things about Mitt Romney. But Foster Freese is like a lot of right-wing capitalists. He thinks he can buy his way, and he can, into any goddamn thing he wants to. Anything he wants to. When you have enough money, I didn't buy into anything. In Wisconsin, he ran a minute-long spot about why he believed Rick Santorum was the only candidate capable of beating President Obama in November. Freese told listeners in this spot, quote, when others say one thing in the primary elections, then another in the general election, Rick Santorum stays strong in his positions. Rasmussen polls show Santorum being President Obama by 4 percentage points in the 4 core states of Florida, North Carolina, and Virginia, while Mitt Romney loses by 4 points. I think he's the guy who also said that Romney was the worst Republican. Well, no, that was Santorum himself. But he's a dangerous right winger. Just like the Koch brothers. And Larry wrote to me and said, he's a fanatical Christian extremist and a Wall Street legend and darling. Essentially, Freese embodies the connection between Wall Street and the Christian right wing. He's a weaponized crusader for all things right wing and evangelical. There's a bunch of stuff out on the sky. You can find out yourself if you want to. Foster Friess, F-R-I-E-S-S. But, you know, his statement that Barack Obama better have teleprompters that are bulletproof, or I hope his teleprompters are bulletproof. You know, after a while, this gets so tiresome, doesn't it? These right-wing pigs like Foster Friess and the rest of this scum who keep using the imagery of assassination of the President of the United States over and over and over again, reducing it down to a punchline of a joke, and then jumping back and saying, well, of course that's not what I meant. What I meant was, I hope his teleprompters are painted red. What? Oh, yeah, what'd you think I said? Well, you said you hope his teleprompters are bulletproof. No, that's not what I said. What I said is, I hope his teleprompters are made out of natural wood. What? That's not what you said. Yes, it is. No, you said you hope his teleprompters are bulletproof. No. I said, I hope that when he gives a press conference, he wears corduroys. What? Jesus. Foster Friess, huh? Another right-wing super PAC hog. Rick Santorum yesterday, Mitt Romney tomorrow. What are you going to do, Foster, when Mitt Romney has his ass handed to him in 46 states by, you know, the Kenyan? What are you going to do then? Huh? You going to start backing the Kenyan? Pig. Think of this. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Gabriel Hunt. The message, check out the new single, Occupy and Uprise, by Black Guero. Help support independent hip-hop and spread the message of truth, peace, and justice. Let this be the year we wake up, overcome the scum bugs, or scumbags, and collectively speak. Thanks, Gabriel. I have in my hand here a paperback book written by Hogan Gorman. She is an ex-model. She was living the, as it says here on the back, she was living the typical New York working actor's life. And for those of you who have gone through that, you know what that is. That is hauling your ass around to auditions every chance you get. And then going to work about 4:30 in the afternoon, hustling coffee or waitressing or doing whatever you have to do, waitering. I had two friends in New York who were doing that. The woman was attending Circle in the Square, and her husband was picking up gigs for television commercials. And you know what they did to pay the bills? They had a clown act. They did clown acts at children's parties. Hogan, have you ever done that clown act?
No.
You haven't done that one, huh?
No, I haven't done that one. I've waited on a bunch of clowns, though.
Right. Welcome to the program. I got the book the other day from your agent, and spent about 3 or 4 hours blowing through it. And I'll tell you, I agree with what Salman Rushdie had to say on the blurb on the front of your book, a smart, tough, and very funny book. The thing about your book, I have to tell you about the book, the style that I really appreciate, and that is the fact that you move this story with dialogue. There's very little exposition. It's conversations and what you dealt with. But what a hell of a story. Give an outline. What happened when you got hit by the car and you didn't have any insurance?
Yeah, well, I was, as you said, I was walking to work at my waitressing job, and I was hit by a car going about 40 miles an hour. My head took out the whole windshield of the car, and then they slammed on the brakes, and I went flying about 10 feet. And being, you know, a struggling actor and a waitress, and the place I worked didn't offer health care, and in between rent and eating, I couldn't afford it on my own. I was, after the accident, taken to the hospital, and once they found out I didn't have insurance, I was pretty much ignored. I had to beg for a CAT scan of my head, and the guy in the bed next to me, who had only fainted during dinner but who had insurance, everybody was paying attention to him, and he was kept overnight for observation.
You know, let me just put in that part. When you got to the emergency room and you're laying there on the gurney, I want to tell you that really started to freak me out, especially the way you described the headache, how your head was just pounding, and how many people have to go through that because of the lack of universal health care in this country. But when I was reading that part, even though your style is breezy and you try to find humor in all this, I have to tell you, I just kind of chilled. I was waiting for the next paragraph that would say, well, and then they found an enormous blood clot right in the center of my brain. I knew that was going to come at some point, even though it didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did have a severe concussion, and my short-term memory was shot for about 2 years. I was having vision problems and balance problems. In addition to all my other injuries, but yeah.
Well, the story when you is it's almost like an Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole.
I went all the way down.
When you started with not necessarily in the sequence, but the food stamps and the Medicaid and the trying to get help and being referred here and referred there, your stories about how. You know, getting on the bus and trying to get to this place and then that place and the attitude that people had. One thing I found very interesting, the fact that you're an attractive white woman and you were in a situation that normally attractive white women don't find themselves in, but there you were, and how you were treated by the people who were supposed to be there helping you.
Yeah. And it's insane, and you know, it is navigating the social service, you know, the social safety nets in this country is quite a labyrinth, especially when you're injured.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, heart-wrenching at times and demoralizing at times, and you know, just trying to get help. And I sometimes I would say I'm in America, right?
Yeah. The experience that you write about, especially then after you got an attorney, and you found out that describe what happens when you found out what you were dealing with and trying to get a lawsuit settled to pay the bills, and how people this idea, I'd never heard this before, where you can get service if people know that you have a lawsuit pending.
Right.
And yet they can nail part of that lawsuit down. Is that how it works? They can put a claim against it.
What happened was, after the hospital sent me home over the next few days, it became apparent how injured I was. And no doctor, I would call up trying to get a doctor's appointment, and no doctor would see me until I found a lawyer first and filed all the paperwork to be covered by something called No Fault, which in certain states covers people hurt in accidents up to a certain amount of money if the driver is insured. So I had to do that before a doctor would even see me, but then No Fault can cut you off at any time, which they ended up doing. And by this point, I had maxed out my credit cards, run through what little savings I had, and had nowhere else to turn. And there are these companies that will loan you money against your pending court settlement, but they can charge you exorbitant, interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I had nowhere else to turn, so I had to do that, and then ended up on food stamps and Medicaid and eventually disability. But you can't apply for disability until you've been injured and unable to work for 6 months. And then it still takes longer for them to examine you. And then by the time they decided I was disabled, it was 10 months after the accident.
You know, as I read your account, your story, I kept thinking, why don't you just go home?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I live in New York, number one. And number two, my mother lives paycheck to paycheck as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't burden her like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't have afforded to support both of us.
No, I understand that. But I just had a sense reading the book that at several points, what you needed was somebody to just say, poor baby. And you know how I mean that.
Yeah.
You know, just to,
yeah,
just,
and my mom would fly. I mean, my poor mom, you know, was just a nervous wreck being in California, and she would fly in.
Right.
You know, she flew in. I finally let her come after the accident. You know, I told her for a couple of weeks, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, and I wasn't fine at all. And then she flew in for that. She flew in, you know, when I had to have surgery. She, you know, she was back here as much as she could be.
The one thing, well, one of several things. After you had the surgery, you say, it's been 3 days since the surgery, 3 days of gut-wrenching, unrelenting agony. The throbbing in my knee is constant. The slightest pressure on my right leg causes a chain reaction in my body. It feels like somebody is hitting my knee with a sledgehammer while simultaneously punching me in the back. Dear God, I mean, plus you had to go to Social Security office and the various social...
I had to go to the Social Security office the next day after surgery. Because I had applied for disability, and then they schedule you with a doctor's appointment, and my caseworker said, don't miss, or we're going to send you an appointment in the mail. Don't miss or cancel it, because it'll take several more months for you to get another appointment. So I received, you know, my appointment to see a doctor, and it was scheduled for the day after I was having knee surgery.
All right. Hogan, we have to take a break here, but
okay.
when we come back, I want to ask you the obvious question of what you learned. I mean, what kind of obviously this was one hell of a learning experience for you, and what you've learned about not just about the lack of adequate medical, the availability of medical care in this country because of the way it's set up, but also maybe, if anything, what you learned about your ability to fight, because I was very impressed with what you did, and I just want to get your opinion. We'll be right back. We're talking to Hogan Gorman. She's the author of Hot Cripple. An incurable smartass takes on the healthcare system and lives to tell the tale. We'll be right back. Talking with Hogan Gorman, her book is Hot Cripple. It is from Peregrine Press, which is a division of the Penguin Group, and it's out there right now. You can buy it. Hot Cripple. An incurable smartass takes on the healthcare system and lives to tell the tale. And again, I quote Salman Rushdie because I like his writing, too. A smart, tough, and very funny book, he says. I think what people who read this book Hogan would be most impressed with is the attitude that you were able to, I'm assuming you were able to maintain. I don't know if the attitude only came when you wrote the book, but if during this odyssey that you had to go through, if your attitude was as you write about it in the book, I don't know how you did that, because you were dealing, obviously, with some pretty serious developments as a result of being smashed by that car, and yet you were able to do it, to tell the story in a very breezy way. Was that the way you felt during, or the way you felt as you wrote it?
My sense of humor was the only thing that wasn't injured in the accident. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, you know, I did, you know, as you've read in my book, I allowed myself 20 minutes every morning to have a full-on meltdown,
right,
in my bed. And then I would, after that 20 minutes was over, I would pick myself up and, you know, get out of bed and, you know, get dressed and go to my doctor's appointments or, you know, mm-hmm, whatever the joy of the day was that day, the food stamp office. But I did, you know, try to keep my sense of humor throughout it, because sometimes when things get so out of control and it's just one thing after the next, mm-hmm, it does become a bit humorous, because you're like, what else can happen to me?
Yeah, I do get that. It's just that when a person is dealing with as much pain as people can deal with sometimes, and obviously you did, I really respect the fact that people can find humor that transcends that pain. You know, they use that to get over it or around it or, mm-hmm, underneath it and continue to do what they have to do. Let me ask you, what did you learn? Two things, two-part question, if you don't mind, Hogan. What did you learn about the healthcare system such as it is in this country? A. B. About yourself?
About the healthcare system, you know, I mean, I think we can both agree that it's completely broken in this country.
Oh, my God, yes.
And it, you know, healthcare, I don't think, should be a luxury that only some can afford. I think it should be a basic human right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I learned that this isn't just my story, especially when I was writing it and sitting in those offices. It's not just my story. It's the story of millions of Americans,
yeah,
that are going through this every day. And there's something, you know, fundamentally wrong that we're the only civilized country in the world that can't figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think we're starting to, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, if everything goes as planned, but, you know, we've got to sort this out.
Do you favor the idea of single payer, which I'll tell you is what I favor?
I wanted single payer, but that was never really brought to the table.
Right. But isn't that makes the whole debate, as far as I'm concerned, to have been kind of fraudulent. No offense to the people who thought they were sincerely working toward an improvement in the healthcare system, but I really fault Obama for not pushing these Republicans and Democrats, pushing them, the ones that are on the take from the health insurance industry.
Insurance and pharma.
Right,
yeah.
And pushing them and saying, no, this is what we're going to have. We are going to have single payer. It's going to be, call it Medicare for all, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be something that everybody can buy into. It's financed through a tax, just like the Medicare tax. And from this point on, people have medical help or assistance or care when they need it. And it's just a damn shame that we don't have politicians who have the courage to do that. It really is.
Well, no, I mean, we're corporate America, really, aren't we? And those insurance companies and pharma have a lot of money, and that's what happened, I think.
I think if we got to know you a little bit better, if I got to know you a little bit better, I'd like your politics, Hogan. I just have a feeling. Hey, listen, thank you very much for coming on the program. Thanks for writing the book. Again, it's I hate to say it's a fun read, because it's not.
It is. It's fun. It's a fast read, I think.
It is a fast read. And again, I like your style. I like the use of dialogue to advance plot. And I like the idea that you came through this the way you came through it. I hope it's a great seller, and I appreciate you coming on, okay?
Thank you for having me.
All right, Hogan, take care.
Okay,
all right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hogan Gorman is the author. The name of the book is Hot Cripple. You ought to get this. I'm serious. You just ought to get it and read it. And, well, you'll know what to do next. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. You want to call in? 877-996-2556 is the number. This hour being sponsored by Gabriel Hunt. Gabriel's message. Check out the new single, Occupy and Uprise. By Black Guero, help support independent hip-hop and spread the message of truth, justice, and peace. Let this be the year we wake up, overcome the scumbags, and collectively speak. Thanks, Gabriel. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a guest. His name is Dr. Roger Libby. Oh, his name is Roger Libby. Doctor is his title. He is a well-known sociologist and sex therapist. He has a very active practice, no pun intended, in the Seattle area. And full disclosure, Roger and I have known each other for about 20 years. He used to live here in Atlanta. He's, in addition to being all this, he's a pretty good friend. He lives with his wife and two children in the Seattle area. And used to have a program on radio here in Atlanta on the progressive rock station, believe it or not, every Sunday night. And he would take questions from people about issues relating to sex. Everything from masturbation to safe sex to unsafe sex to when to have sex to how to have sex to why do you have sex to sex is wonderful. And he was also very much a very strong foe of, adamant foe of the religious right and all their craziness. I think you're going to like Roger. He sounds a little professorial when he's on the radio, but he is very entertaining, very astute therapist. He works with couples who may be having some sexual problems, and he helps people, like any therapist, any good therapist, he helps people resolve their own problems. So Roger will be on tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Eastern. So be here for that. One last thing before we take some phone calls. There was a case in St. Louis recently of a homeless woman, who, happened to be African-American. Yeah, she sought treatment for a sprained ankle. She went to the emergency room. She had a sprained ankle. She was refused treatment. She refused to leave the emergency room until she got treatment. She knew she had hurt herself severely. The emergency room staff called the police. The woman was arrested for refusing to leave the emergency room. They took her to jail. There's a video where you can see officers from the police station carrying this woman into a jail cell. The door closes, and the woman is heard moaning and crying. That night she died in the jail cell. An autopsy was performed. It was discovered that blood clots had formed in her ankles and legs and migrated to her lungs. Dead. Because she didn't have insurance. And not to minimize this woman's story, but how often does this happen to people? Or something similar. How many people, what during the debate on the Affordable Care Act, what was the number, Kathy? 60, 70, 80,000 people a year in this country die because they don't get treatment because they don't have health insurance. And this is an example. I mean, who thinks about this stuff? A severely sprained ankle, a homeless person, severely sprained ankle, goes to the emergency room, can you just look at it? No, get out of here. But this is an emergency room. Now, I guess emergency rooms don't have to treat people who show up with sprained ankles. Who'd have thought she had blood clots that would then migrate to her lungs and kill her? I hate that story. Okay, phone calls. Dave is in Chicago, listening online. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I like the author, and it's a really good time to hear, because there's a, I don't know if you heard about this occupation in on the south side of Chicago of a mental health clinic.
No, I haven't. I saw an email. Did you send me that email?
No, actually, I didn't.
Huh. Well, that's all I know about it. What's the deal?
Well, the mayor of Chicago is a, we call him Mayor 1%, Rahm Emanuel. He's cutting off the funding for closing half of the mental health clinics in the city of Chicago. Out of 12, he's cutting 6. And one of them, some of the people from the community and some occupiers and supporters are down at this Woodlawn Clinic. And trying to get support. People are live streaming video from there. There's three, at least three people are live streaming video from there.
On live stream?
Yeah, in Ustream. There's, I mean, I don't know how much of it you want to put out, but you can hashtag Save Our Clinics on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, on Ustream, one of the guy inside is videoing inside, so you can see what's going on inside the clinic. Is S.P. Moberg. S is in Sam,
mm-hmm.
E is in Peter. Mo, B-E-R-G. And that's, I guess, if you go to ustream.tv.
Now, this, Rahm Emanuel is ordering these clinics closed? This is a city issue?
Yeah, I believe it's the city. Let me double check.
And these are mental health clinics. I would imagine they also work with addiction.
Yeah, some 5,100 patients receive services through these clinics. About 3,000 of them are uninsured or underinsured. Another 2,100 carry Medicaid, Medicare, or private insurance. And it'll save $3 million for the taxpayers. And and Rahm just gave away.
Dave?
Yes, sir?
Yeah, we lost you completely. Rahm just gave away what?
Oh, $150 million for the fat cats, like Sears, you know, Sears and Roebuck.
Mm-hmm.
And they promptly closed 100 stores. So the mayor's really doing awful stuff, and people are trying to fight back from the libraries to the clinics. And Occupy Chicago is doing a pretty good job now, trying to heat it up.
All right. Well, listen, if you don't mind, let us know how this develops, as it develops, okay?
Sure thing. I'm glad somebody sent an email. You have a great night, Mike.
All right, Dave. Take care. I appreciate you checking in. Arnold!
Hey, what's up, my brother?
Kathy says you're going to be a regular sponsor of the program.
Oh, yes, sir. Every month, man. I got this. This got to last, man.
Are you
this is where I breathe air at right here, baby. I mean, come on now.
Well, I really...
Cut off my ventilator?
I really appreciate it. I just, you know, I get a little bit nervous when people... I mean, it's cool for you to do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Man, all right. Well, thank you, Arnold. I really do.
Yeah, I might just spend that, man, at the racetrack. Come on.
All right. You wanted to talk about the Zimmerman case, right?
A little bit about that. That's the highlight. And then I want to talk about the low light of that Adam West down there. That's sorry, Pat.
Oh, isn't he a mess, Alan West? Isn't this guy a mess? You're talking about 80 members of the Progressive Caucus are communists in the United States House of Representatives. 80 of them are communists. I thought that stopped with Joe McCarthy back in the 50s when he accused, I think he accused Eisenhower of being a
right.
communist. He accused,
he accused a lot of people.
People in the State Department. And here's this freak talking about 80 members of the Progressive Caucus are communists.
Well, you see this old guy right here. He wants to put himself in his position because he thinks, as well as most of those crazy right wingers think, those far right wingers think that they can be helped by getting on a ticket with Mitt Romney mm-hmm. as his vice president candidate. And I think it was those fumes were framed by the great Sarah Palin from the great Northwest, what's her name, Ms. Sarah Palin, the ex-governor, the ex-failed vice president candidate.
Mm-hmm.
She said something about the fact that he would make an excellent vice president candidate.
She said Alan West would make an excellent vice
president. Oh, yes. She said, if I could nominate, I would put his name.
Oh, my God. You know, that woman has been in too many blizzards. Hold on a second, Arnold. I got to do some commercials. Then we'll come right back, talk with Arnold in Durham. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
In the heart of America, if you know your history, then you would know where you're coming from. Then you wouldn't have to ask me, who the heck you would think I am, and just a buffalo soldier.
No abuse.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Gabriel Hunt. And Gabriel's message, check out the new single Occupy and Uprise by Black Guerrero. Help support independent hip-hop and spread the message of truth, justice, and peace. Let this be the year we wake up, overcome the scumbags, and collectively speak. Thanks, Gabriel. All right, Arnold. Zimmerman.
Yeah, we was talking about...
Alan West. I mean, anybody who gets a recommendation of any sort from Sarah Palin, you know that the person being recommended is some kind of, just a right-wing maniac. So, you know...
The great Rick... Fantorium had told us how to talk about this guy in code. Black and white code. You got to talk to this guy.
You talking about blah people?
No, this guy's a blah nig. You know. So.
You talking about Mr. West?
Yeah, Mr. West. That's we got to start talking. We got to use some code when you talk to this guy. You know, like the Tom that he is. You know, I think that him and Herman Cain will have the best looking shoeshine stands at the National Convention.
Stop.
Down there in Tampa.
Alan, Herman Cain was funny.
Yeah, he was funny.
I mean, he really was. Alan West is not funny. I mean,
no,
You know why he was forced to resign out of the military, and I think he was either a colonel or a lieutenant colonel. He had this habit of shooting, you know, making prisoners in Iraq think that he was going to shoot them in order to get them to talk. And, you know, even though we had no business being there at all, I guess his superiors figured that that was pushing a little bit too far, so he had to resign. I mean, he wasn't dishonorably discharged. He wasn't court-martialed, but I think the pressure was put on him. Look, man, your career is over. So, you know, get out. You're a colonel. Go. You know, you have a nice retirement paycheck, and just get out of town. So I think that's, you know, exactly what he did.
Well, they dumped the misery on his company because he became a right-wing teabagging crazoid. What I wanted to say about the Zimmerman case, Mike, was that I was just set back to how these people, the parents, carried itself during this crisis, you know? They haven't said anything, you know, they not looking for revenge or they... Their fangs are dripping with the one they want to bury this kid. Hmm. They want justice, and that's what she said. The lady said, she said, it's not a black white thing. This is a right and wrong thing. And the way they've been carrying themselves, I'm telling you, I don't know how I would stood up if I lost one of my kids or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't stand up there like they are. And when that special prosecutor came up and said what she said, I tell you what, it took a relief off of me. I was worried. I was worried that this was going to turn to be a real mess.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a big riot that's going to start in this country. And maybe a race war start in this country because of this thing. And it's a sad way we'd have come down to it. But black people, my people, going to have to realize that we're targeted too. We're targeted too for this year's election. We are like got bullseyes on us. When we show up at the polls,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna have it blocked all kinds of ways. These new laws are written by the NRA and this Alec joint.
Right.
It's we're targeted. We just like the landing craft coming on shore of D-Day.
You are.
So every inch of that ground was targeted by the Germans, and you couldn't stand a chance on that ground.
Right.
That's how we're gonna have to go to our polls. We're gonna go through being sighted down, you know?
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's a sad thing. We got to use this as a rallying point. I think this summer is going to really show something.
Yeah, I think it's going to be rough. Listen, the thing that I always notice when you have a family who goes on television after their son has been shot down, and the family... And I'm talking about black families. They go on television, and I see it here in Atlanta all the time. I saw it in Chicago all the time. They go on television, and what they ask for is justice. And you know, I will sit there, and I can't help it. Now, maybe I feel a connection or an affinity with these people because I'm a parent. I have no idea. Or maybe it's because I believe in justice. But every time... That happens. I think, to, you know, I do. I get a lump in my throat. I sit there and I think, you know, what you just said, how do you stand losing your kid to something like being shot down for no reason and then have to go on television and ask for justice? This is part of white privilege that a lot of white people just simply don't understand. I can't remember the last time I saw a white person who had a family member gunned down by the police, gunned down by a thug, gunned down by a black gangster or a white gangster, and sit there and ask for justice. You don't hear white people ask for that. We expect it. Black folk have to go on, and the best they can hope for is justice instead of going on television and sitting there and just going berserk because their son was murdered for no reason. Now, that strikes home with me every single time this happens. I started noticing this, I don't know, some time ago, Arnold, where black folk get on there, and the mother and the father, or the mother, or the auntie, or whoever, they get on there, and all they're asking for, Al Sharpton ever asked for, was justice. And I got to leave it there, Arnold. We're flat out of time.
All right, brother.
Call me tomorrow night.
See you later.
All right. Take care, Arnold. justice. That, you know, I don't know. And then the white vermin in this country, the right-wing vermin, the little cheesy-ass blogsters and the Beck crowd, they mock that. They make fun of that. Sons of bitches. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is being sponsored by Christy, and she has such a unique last name. I'm just going to give your first name, Christy. Christy is the sponsor, and her message, happy belated birthday to me, to her, not to me, to Christy. Keep it lit, Mike, for the future of us all. The 99% may not all know it, but we need you to speak on behalf of us. Well, that's very kind. Thanks, Christy. Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday to you. Last night, there were a couple of items that I got some response on here today, or earlier today. First was the U.S. House, the House Republicans. Remember, it was the New York Times editorial yesterday. The head was Double Dose of Harm. And the Times editorial talked about these two ill-conceived health care measures that were folded into a single bill and passed on a largely party-line vote last month. They always are. One of the aspects of this measure was a malpractice restrictions on medical malpractice awards that would limit the ability of patients who have been grievously harmed to receive fair compensation for their injuries, is the way the Times put it. And we talked about it a little bit. The malpractice measure would make it harder to get compensation for damages such as pain and suffering, and would limit awards to $250,000, which is far too little, as we pointed out last night, to compensate somebody who is paralyzed or blinded for life by medical negligence. So Michael in Roswell wrote about this. He sent this to me last night, late. He writes, I've had long talks with personal injury lawyers. I know about the malpractice tort reform models that have been proposed. Virtually every one of these proposed so-called reforms are directed not at reducing medical costs or protecting lawyers, but rather are intended to destroy the income of personal injury lawyers who overwhelmingly vote and contribute to Democrats. The most important aspect of these reforms is that they limit non-economic rewards and limit lawyers to being paid out of non-economic rewards. In other words, lawyers can't take anything of the economic medical costs loss awards. So if somebody is awarded by a jury, if this law passes, which I don't think it will, $1 million for pain and suffering, the attorney would not be allowed to touch that, no matter how hard the attorney worked. Michael goes on, this has two effects, greatly reducing the income of personal injury lawyers who do take cases, and inducing lawyers to not take cases because they can't make any money on them due to the way the court procedures are structured. For example, expert witnesses in such cases have to be declared at the time the case is filed, which means that regardless of outcome, the lawyer is on the hook for the costs, and one expert witness physician can run $15,000 to $20,000. Throw in someone's expense, or throw in some expert in examining medical records or hospital procedures and a private investigator, and the out-of-pocket costs start to skyrocket. And with the cap on non-economic loss, all these expenses have to come out of the lawyer's percentage of just the non-economic award. Further, no lawyer wants to assume those costs when there's no incentive in the system for settlement before the case is filed. With non-economic losses capped at levels typical in such legislation, the insurers have no incentive to settle. It's far cheaper for them to go to trial because the caps ensure that even if they lose, they've still made money overall. While the personal injury lawyer going to trial incurs costs that may equal or exceed his allowable fee if he or she is trying to serve the client in keeping with professional responsibilities. The net effect is to deny ordinary people access to the courts. Let me just digress a moment from his email. Having said the things that Michael said about non-economic loss and economic loss, I think he sums it up fairly well here with the last sentence of that paragraph. The net effect is to deny ordinary people access to the courts in these kinds of cases. This is precisely what the right wing wants in this country. Absolutely. They want everybody armed, nobody able to go to court, people at each other's throats, screaming, yelling, murder, mayhem. This is what they want. But on a less chaotic level, yes, Michael's right. The net effect is to deny ordinary people access to the courts. And then he continues by saying, most importantly, the cost of awards is minuscule compared to the insurer's revenues. Long-term studies done by the Trial Lawyers Association show that malpractice awards represent about 2% of the insurer's operating costs. And insurers themselves have admitted that awards don't have much effect on premiums. And this has been borne out in practice. Texas voters were encouraged to make malpractice reform part of the state constitution, which they did, being disingenuously told that the reforms would reduce health care costs. You know it's coming, don't you? 1 year after passage of the constitutional amendment, the major malpractice insurer in the state, a subsidiary of GE Capital, raised malpractice insurance premiums 19% across the board. How's that for a kick in the ass? Huh? The poor dumbasses in Texas are told by the right wingers, well, you know, this is going to let's change all this malpractice nonsense. This will lower insurance costs, make it easier for people to buy this insurance, that insurance, health insurance, blah, 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 blah. So the voters, being still gullible when right-wingers tell them anything, how anyone can believe anything a Republican says. You know that joke, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. That used to be true. Now the joke is, hi, I'm with the Republican Party. I want to do something to make your life better. Ah! Run! Or pull a weapon as soon as you hear that. Because they're not here to help you. They are here to lie, cheat, steal, defraud. Ask Florida Governor Rick Scott about fraud. I mean, just start there. Ask any of these swine about lying. So, as Michael pointed out, in Texas, everybody was told, well, come on, let's make malpractice reform part of the state constitution, for Christ's sake. Not even just a plain old law. Make it the state constitution. You know why? Because then it can't be declared unconstitutional. It's part of the constitution. Brilliant. On the part of the lying, thieving, sneaking, cheating sons of bitches who would deny people access to the courts. Am I cussing? You're right, I'm cussing, because this makes me furious. How many other states has this happened in? How many states is it going to happen in?
Oh, well, let's change our constitution and, you know, it'll lower the health insurance costs.
So the poor voters of Texas misled once again. Not all of them. A lot of voters went, yeah, hell yeah, let's do this. Oh, goddamn, we'll take care of those personal injury lawyers. I'm sick of seeing their commercials on TV anyway. To hell with them.
Well, I happen to be sick of the commercials, too. But what are you going to do, booby, if you live in Texas and because of medical malpractice, all of a sudden you're informed, oh, gee, you know, I'm sorry, we took out the kidney that's healthy. The diseased kidney is still there, and now it's too late to do anything. And you have, how long do I have to live, doc? Let me see, what time is it? You get the point? We'll be right back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tom Lorett, who is a frequent contributor, editorial-wise, to this program. Tom sends a lot of stuff that we share with you over the air. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it very much. So where was I? Oh, yeah. Michigan, Brooke Harris, English and journalism teacher, Pontiac Academy for Excellence. Fired. check out the petition if you feel like it at the Southern Poverty Law Center's website, splc.org, I think. Tom in Tacoma, also known as Riley Coyote, not Wiley, but Riley, W-R-Y, oh, never mind, if you have to explain it, Riley Coyote. Anyway, he said maybe this would be good for church night. Okay. There's a headline, Sick Santorum Pulls It Out. Adhering to the ancient biblical practice of onanism, Rick Santorum suddenly pulled out of the GOP race on Tuesday. Oh, come on. If I wanted to be really mean, I could have said he performed a late-term abortion on his presidential campaign, but I didn't, did I? Love and laughs to you and yours, Tom at Tacoma. All righty then. Yeah, that's cool. Sure. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, former budget director, I think, for George W. Bush, right? Another one of these right-wing half-wits. He has signed into law in Indiana something called Senate Enrolled Act 1. And according to the website addictinginfo.org, this new law allows citizens to use deadly force against police officers that they, the citizens, think are illegally entering their homes. Republicans say the bill is designed to keep police safe. Jesus, God. Now, regardless of what you think of this bill, you now have a defense in the state of Indiana when you decide to kill a cop. If you think, can you say George Zimmerman? If you think
The cop is entering your house improperly or illegally. Now, the cop may have a warrant. He may be in hot pursuit. There are all sorts of, I'm not in favor of police coming storming into your house. But, I mean, what happens if a cop shows up? That's supposing next door neighbor calls the police and says, listen, I hear screaming coming from the house next door. And it sounds like a woman is being beaten. And dispatcher says, okay, we'll send somebody over. So they send a couple of cops over. The cops come up. They stand on the front porch, knock on the door. Nobody answers. They hear screaming. They hear shrieking. Help me, help me. They burst through the door. The guy standing in there, just about to kill his wife, turns the gun on the cops and shoots them dead. He now has a defense. Thanks to the Republican governor, Mitch Daniels. Huh? But the governor says, the Republicans say this bill is designed to keep police safe. Democrats in Indiana say the bill will lead to the wanton killing of police officers. Representative Craig Fry, a Democrat, says the bill, quote, is going to cause people to die, and it's too late after somebody dies for a jury to sort it all out. Somebody's going to die, whether it's a police officer or an individual who thinks a police officer is entering their home unlawfully. People are going to die, end quote. Now, this Democrat, Craig Fry, his colleague, Democratic Representative Linda Lawson, a former police captain, says the bill would create, quote, an open season on law enforcement, end quote. And she says the law was opposed by the 1,250 state police officers and 14,000 men and women in blue, brown, and green, reference to their uniform color. Now, this new law reverses a state Supreme Court ruling that homeowners do not have the right to use force against law enforcement officers who they believe are illegally entering their homes. According to the Evansville Indiana Courier-Press, an Evansville resident fought a police officer who followed him into his house during a domestic dispute call. Quote, the state Supreme Court found that officers sometimes enter homes without warrants for reasons protected by the law, such as pursuing suspects or preventing the destruction of evidence. In these situations, we find it unwise to allow a homeowner to adjudge the legality of police conduct in the heat of the moment, end quote. The court added, as we decline to recognize the right to resist unlawful police entry into a home, we decline to recognize the right to batter a police officer as part of that resistance. End quote. More of this when we come back. But the light of joy I know is scared beyond belief. Way down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face. And common sense is ringing out the bell. This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road.
Just had another cup of coffee. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tom Lorett. Thank you, Tom. So, Republican Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana signs a bill put together by Republicans, probably religious evangelical Republicans, that will allow people who think police are entering their home illegally to kill the cops. And they say that this, the Republicans say the bill is designed to keep the cops safe. God, every time I see that line, I just laugh. This overturns or reverses the state Indiana State Supreme Court ruling that homeowners do not have the right to use force against law enforcement, who the homeowner might think is illegally entering their house. You know, there's a time and a place, I guess, to sort all that out. On the other hand, there might be a lot of people now. I'm sure that the militia types and maybe you, truth seeker, feel that this is a good thing. I mean, if Trayvon Martin can be gunned down in the street by a wannabe, I don't know if Zimmerman wanted to be a big-ass gangster thug or a big-ass bullying cop. I have no idea. He wanted to be something. That's why he shot an unarmed kid in cold blood. But this is what the right-wing crazy people want. They want gunfights. They want open warfare between black and white, gay and straight, cops and not cops, left and right. This is what the Limbaughs of the world and the rest of these filthy slime, like Glenn Beck, this is what they've been pushing during their entire careers. Chaos in the streets. Breakdown of law and order. And they say they're for law and order. No, they're not. They're for chaos and destruction. And they always have been, always will be. In the meantime, they get rich. Very rich. Preaching their ideology of insanity, stupidity, ridiculousness, bigotry, hatred. Come on, Rush, let's hear you call another innocent woman a slut. Huh? So, while announcing his decision to sign the bill into law, Governor Daniels said the law doesn't declare an open season on police officers. No, not at all. I mean, in the world of newspeak, of course not. He said, quote, "Today is an important day to say Indiana's outstanding law enforcement officers put their lives on the line every day to protect all Hoosiers. The right thing to do is to cooperate with them in every way possible. This law is not an invitation to use violence or force against law enforcement officers." What the hell? It isn't. It is exactly that. But he goes on. "In fact, it restricts when an individual can use force, specifically deadly force, on an officer. So don't try anything. Chances are overwhelming. You will be breaking the law and wind up in far worse trouble as a result," end quote. Well, if that's the case, then why do you have the law, you stupid bastard? I mean, what's the point of signing the law? Daniels is trying to put political spin on a bad bill. As addictinginfo.org says, in fact, Daniels admits that he nearly vetoed it precisely because the bill could be interpreted, misinterpreted, and could lead to killings of police and citizens. "The law is basically a loophole for citizens to kill police officers and claim self-defense. The Zimmerman action." Well, I felt threatened, so I had to kill him. You felt threatened? Yeah. He had a bag of Skittles. Really? Let's face it, there are a lot of people who think police officers have no right to enter their home or property, even if there's a warrant. I mean, how many of these incidences do we need to, I mean, Ruby Ridge, Waco, I mean, you know, it goes on and on and on. And, of course, there have been times when cops, in their zeal to bust another marijuana smoker, have busted into somebody's house where they were convinced because intelligence, quote, quote, told them the house was full of marijuana. They come busting in, and in the process, an old lady dies, or a couple of kids are traumatized for the rest of their lives. Oops, wrong house! Okay. So how do you address that? Kill the cop! What? What? Well, that's what the Republican governor of Indiana says, although he's pretending like he's not saying it. He says the right thing to do is to cooperate with cops in every way possible because they're trying to protect all Hoosiers. This law is not an invitation to use violence or force against law enforcement officers. In fact, it is an invitation to use deadly force. But this is what Republicans do. This is how they present their lies and their deceit. They'll stand there and look you right in the face. Well, we're not about forcing our religion down your throat. Yes, you are. Well, we're not about giving tax breaks to the ultra wealthy. Yes, you are. Well, we're not about signing laws that make it easier to kill cops. Yes, you are. Everything a Republican office holder says is a lie, completely, top to bottom. I've always wondered, you know, since everything a Republican office holder says, and most Republican voters, their means of communication is lying, pathological lying. How do they talk to their families? How does Rick Santorum go home and talk to his wife and kids? How does he do that? How does Gingrich talk to Diamond Girl? Beep, boop, 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 beep, beep. How? Everything they say is a lie. Every time they open their mouths, lies fly out. How do you do that? How do you be a Republican and raise children? Oh, wait a minute. That's right. You tell them all these spook stories, right? When you die, if you're good, you go to heaven. But if you're bad, you burn in hell for all eternity, Billy. While snakes, scorpions, and spiders bite and tear at your flesh. Mommy? Daddy? Wow. This bill, as Addicting Info points out, is the equivalent of Florida's Stand Your Ground law that led to the killing of Trayvon Martin. The killer, Zimmerman, believed this innocent kid was a threat. So he followed him and then shot him to death. And because of the so-called Stand Your Ground laws, Zimmerman is wandering around someplace trying to collect money off the internet. You know, what an unconscionable son of a bitch. He goes and murders a young kid, and then he puts up a website that says, give me money, give me money. I have to have living expenses. Why don't you contact one of the neo-Nazi or Klan operations, George, and explain your situation? I'm sure they will probably shower you with riches. I mean, after all, you eliminated one more African-American male. That counts to those people, George. Unless you're just working a scam here. Not only are you a killer, but you're also working a scam to collect money from people? Really? Boy, aren't you a filthy human being, huh? Aren't you just junk? But Zimmerman claims self-defense, and that's part of the reason he's still in his hidey hole someplace, operating his computer, trying to collect money from the terminally gullible.
Well, you got to protect me because, you know, all I did was shoot a colored kid. I mean, you know, what's wrong with that? Hell, that happens all the time.
So, Mitch Daniels signs a law that makes the job of law enforcement even more dangerous and ultimately will lead to the legal murder of police officers who are trying to do their job. And again, let me say, I do not defend a police state. I think that in the area of First Amendment rights, the cops are out of control, out on the street. I also maintain that cops do, some of them, develop an attitude that puts them above and beyond any kind of reasonable approach to law enforcement, and they become tyrants. I grant you that. We all know that to be true. When Amadou Diallo is filled full of lead, 41 shots, that's kind of, you know, over-policing, wouldn't you think? On the other hand, the Republican law and order liars, skunks, sponsor and get passed. And now the governor signs a bill that says it's open season on cops. Nice stuff, huh?
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Tom Lorette. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very much. Interesting editorial. The Times today, a double dose of harm. House Republicans combined two health care measures that are anti-health care, of course, into a single bill, House Republicans, and they passed it on a largely party-line vote a couple of weeks back. One measure repealed an independent board that is one of the major cost control measures in the health care reform law. The board, known as the Independent Payment Advisory Board, is supposed to come up with ways to ramp down Medicare spending if the growth rate of Medicare spending is projected to exceed a specified target. Now, despite what Republicans claim, the board, which will include doctors, consumers, and patient advocates, of course, the Republicans, the right-wing liars, call that a board of unelected bureaucrats. The board is not allowed to ration medical care. That's the new meme. Oh, they're going to ration medical care. These health insurance companies are just, I mean, they are amazing. They are real vampires, bloodsuckers, liars, and they have such willing idiots, useful idiots to go out and do their work for them. Healthcare rationing! Healthcare rationing! Anyway, the Independent Payment Advisory Board is largely restricted to recommending cuts in payments to healthcare providers that would go into effect only if Congress failed to find comparable alternative savings. You see? It's set up so that when these filthy Republicans refuse to do their work, then the board will kick in and do it for them. Very simple. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, repealing this board, which is what the House Republicans are trying to do, would drive up federal spending on Medicare by $3 billion over a decade. Now, these are the same filthy Republicans who are constantly saying, well, we can't afford Medicare. Costs are skyrocketing. So here's a way to bring costs down $3 billion. Oh, no. No. Because Republicans lie about everything. They are liars by definition. The other ill-conceived so-called healthcare measure imposes restrictions on medical malpractice awards. Of course. That would limit the ability of patients who have been grievously harmed to receive fair compensation for their injuries. Now, the malpractice measure would make it harder to seek compensation for non-economic damages, such as pain and suffering, and would limit awards
to $250,000. Which, let me ask you, do you think that is too little, too much, or just about right to compensate someone who is, oh, I don't know, paralyzed from the neck down for life? Or because of a mistake made during surgery? Or someone who is blinded because, oh, I don't know, maybe they were having a meningioma removed or sliced away and, oops, cut your ocular nerve. Sorry! And now that person is blinded for life. So it's $250,000. Let's see. What is it? What's the average family income in this country? $45,000. So that would be enough to live on for 6 years. If you were very, very frugal. Of course, if you were blind, you won't need a car. That cuts a lot of expense right there. You won't be going to movies. Well, actually, I guess at some point you could kind of get used to the blindness and go to listen. You understand what I'm saying here, don't you, truth seeker? So these filthy Republicans. Now, is this the fault of the doctors? No. It's the insurance companies that insure the doctors, the ones that offer malpractice insurance. I don't think there's a doctor out there who, discovering that he or she, a surgeon, he or she had caused someone to be paralyzed for the rest of their lives, would be willing to say, well, too bad, here's your $250,000, now go away. Of course, that's not how it works. The insurance companies, malpractice insurance, that the right-wingers are telling you, well, that's the reason doctors are going out of business. Going out of business? Doctors? I don't think so. So, the Republicans, and I wonder how these Republicans would feel if they wound up paralyzed from the neck down and they were like in their 50s, had a life expectancy of maybe another 30 years. How would they feel? Being told, whoops, well, sorry, didn't mean to sever your spinal cord there, but, you know, stuff happens. Well, you know, I had a rough night last night. I was at a party and I came in and, you know, I didn't mean to cut your spinal cord or the nerves that animate your spinal cord. But I'll tell you what, you get $250,000. What's your complaint? Do you think Republican lawmakers who just in the House who just passed this bill, do you think they would be content with that? Oh, it would also limit patients' ability to file punitive damage suits and limit awards in those suits to $250,000. And as the Times says, the Senate needs to reject or bury this legislation. But do you notice what the Republicans do? They lie. They cheat. They steal. They're frauds. They have no honor. They have no morals. And they damn sure have no ethics. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.